Hi, this is Aeolus Cephas, and this is Stormy Weather, news from the front line in the end times. This week we'll be departing from our usual formula somewhat. I've invited onto the show one of my listeners, Lucinda Horan. Lucinda and I go back pretty far, and I've invited her on the show this week to grill me on a subject about which she's always been very skeptical, that subject of UFOs and alien abductions, and that's what we'll be dedicating the next hour to discussing. So, without further ado, let us proceed. Hi.
Hi, Aeolus. I'm a paranoid. I am a paranoid, but I may not be a master of paranoid awareness. One of the things I'm cautious to believe in is aliens and UFOs, because I haven't had an encounter with an alien, and I haven't had an encounter with a UFO.
So far as you know.
As far as I know. So from a disinterested perspective, it seems most likely to me, as a kind of nuts and bolts paranoid, that it's a result of some kind of psyops, or black op, and not, it's hard for me to see it as anything but that.
A secret government mind control operation.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I'm challenging you to make me believe something about aliens and UFOs other than that they're...
So you don't have a question at all, then? You're just throwing down the gauntlet.
Okay. I do have questions.
I'm not here to make anyone believe anything.
So, in Lucid View, you talk about Masonic Sorcery Theater, and in one of your previous interviews, you talked about parallels with Greek theater and tragedy, and that it was a psychological catharsis. The point of it was psychological catharsis. So do you think it's possible that the UFO alien phenomenon is a form of theater?
I think it's more than possible. I think it's inevitable, actually, conclusion that there is a theatrical nature to experiences, and that they do seem to be enactments. I think initiation ritual is always theatrical, one way or another, in primitive societies. The alien abduction experience, or indeed the UFO, close encounters of first, second, or third kind, or fourth kind would be then into full abduction experience. Taken apart, or especially taken as a sequence, they do unfold in a dramatic fashion, almost as a narrative that seems to be designed to create certain responses in the percipient that is very similar or identical to theatre, which is building up of emotional tension and then the release of tension, so the crisis, and then the climax, and this seems to be the common, perhaps this is a common theme in the abduction experiences, however different they are in detail. In particular, there's this general potentially cathartic, potentially traumatic, and whether this depends on how a person experiences that experience.
So you've seen a consistent narrative in different abduction scenarios, accounts.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the abduction experience itself has now become standardized, in that there are basic components in it which are more or less consistent. What I was suggesting is that the experience had been designed initially to for a specific end, and therefore,
so what end?
With the knowledge of the psychology of the human individual, there would be consistent elements that would play repeatedly, because these are the elements that work. And yes, whether there would then be an added element of contamination, you could say it's participatory theatre. It's a theatrical enactment that requires, or at least invites, the participation of the audience, the feedback of the audience, and then it will evolve and change to meet that.
So it's at least to some degree involuntary involuntary.
What?
Participatory.
Oh, the participation. Well, it's involuntary in the sense that individuals don't choose to be abducted, generally speaking, and of course they're not aware that they're part of a theatre, a theatrical enactment.
So what is the point then? What to what end are these enactments?
Well, the end of initiation, I would say, and which is a question unto itself. What is the end of initiation? It would be the awakening to the totality of our being, I would say. The basic sequence, or one basic sequence, is that the individual will have a sighting of a UFO, of a light in the sky, or an object in the sky that it can't identify. This will lead to a period of missing time. The individual will begin to feel that something isn't quite right. They might not even be aware of the missing time consciously, but they'll be aware that something is not quite right. They'll have a feeling of being watched, have a feeling of that it was more than just a sighting, it was more than just something strange in the sky, there was just some at a deeper level they tend to feel like they've been affected by this experience. And then
often
that night they will then have an encounter with the alien, or alternatively, some days later they will have a spontaneous memory. Perhaps they will be unsettled by this sense of missing time and they'll be unable to forget about it, but each time they try to think about it they get confused, and then finally maybe they go to be hypnotized, or by some other method they retrieve this memory of missing time and they realize that they've been abducted. And then there's the abduction experience itself, which is where the real theater begins. You could say what I've described is sort of the prologue, but again there's a recurring sequence there of the sighting, the missing time, the feeling of something having happened but not knowing what it is, and then the spontaneous recall.
So some of them presumably are black ops. Some of them presumably are what? Alien? Are they from other planets?
Well, I mean, you say presumably. I don't know if we can really presume anything. If there's evidence, and there is, that intelligence agencies are orchestrating these pseudo-abductions with, I mean, technology ranging from the most sophisticated, as in sort of mind-invasive technology that creates full-body hallucinations, to the most basic, like people wearing masks and weird costumes, and perhaps a combination of all these different levels, and of course psychotropic substances, and who knows really what's, but there's definitely evidence that these are being enacted. But my feeling is that these are relatively recent, perhaps in the last 40, 50 years or so, and that they're as much a response to a genuine phenomenon as the source of it. In fact, they're not the source of it at all, but they become the source of this surrogate version of it. And it seems to me a way to co-opt, if that's the word, is a phenomenon that is beyond the control of these agencies.
So that would not be theater?
That would absolutely be theatre, exactly, of course, because it would be an enactment, it would even be scripted.
The psyops.
Yes.
That would be theatre.
Yeah, that would be a theatre of a lower, and not designed for cathartic ends, of course.
So is it beings from other planets, then, the original real phenomenon?
I don't think so. Some people do. I don't believe that for a second. It never even occurred to me that there would be beings from another planet. It just seemed the least likely.
I'd agree with
explanation.
That. I think it's very unlikely.
It's simply too obvious. Mm-hmm. I think what we're talking about is a phenomenon that is imaginal, and therefore is emerging in subtler ways as well as the more concrete ways. So it would be emerging through the media, through film and comic books, magazines and all the rest of it, simultaneously that it would be emerging as this, nuts and bolt event on a global scale, and the two manifestations are complementary, like two sides of the same phenomenon. But But as far as the UFO thing, I mean, this is Carl Jung wrote about it very early on in one of the first books about flying saucers, and this was...
Carl Jung wrote about flying saucers?
You didn't know that?
No.
Yeah, he wrote a book called Flying Saucers, The Myth of Things Seen in the Sky, and he interpreted the flying saucer as a materialization of the psyche, and that it was a mandala, an actualized image of the human soul that was now coming to us externally, also as a symbol of the feminine. And he wrote about it in great depth as a psychic phenomenon. But first of all, you have to remember that to Jung, the psyche was real, and that wasn't a figure of speech or just paying lip service to the psyche. He understood the psyche as real, or perhaps more real than anything else. And so he was at great pains to try and get that across, but of course it's very difficult to make an argument or to express the reality of the psyche in a mechanistic, you know, society. But that was Jung's take on it. But as well as that, he, by the time he'd finished researching flying saucers, he had to accept that they were also physically real. Even though he didn't want to, because, of course, his reputation was already tenuous enough. So either the psyche was actually becoming concrete in itself, or there was also a phenomenon that was simply physically real that was reflecting this psychic phenomenon.
Did he have an opinion of which it was?
I don't know if he had an opinion, because he stopped talking or writing about UFOs after this book and after he realized that they were also physically real. Of course, that was outside his field.
Do you have an opinion on that?
Yeah, I do, of course. I do. And it relates to a question which I still didn't answer, which is, you know, the UFOs and the aliens. And I think it is an interesting question. It's not one that gets asked. There's a sort of understanding of UFOs and aliens as being part of the same phenomenon, which of course they are, but how and why is it? Is it simply that these are ships that have little men in them? No, I don't believe that for a minute. Not for a minute, actually. But there's something so similar, so close to that, that I think that we might interpret it in that way. And I do think abductees, I know that abductees have reported being taken into ships by these beings, that very real ships that actually have smells and that are even described as being a bit dirty or chaotic and incredibly realistic memories. And I'm not going to dismiss those as fantasy. It's not so much that I dismiss that, it's just that that isn't particularly interesting to discuss. It would be very interesting as an experience, but there's only so much you can say about that, really, unless you want to go into the technology. And of course, there is the belief that crash disks have been retrieved and that this technology has been used, and I do think there's something in that. But I think that a more archetypal understanding, and it's not necessarily separate from this, it may be different way of seeing the same phenomenon, is that these beings and the mode of travel is actually one, it's one energy that has different forms of manifestation. And if you look at, you know, fairy lore and even old witchcraft, the holding hands, the forming of the ring, the creating of a cairn, then they would lift off, you know, they form a ring of energy and then they vanish, and then that leaves the circular pattern on the ground, similar to the crop circles, what was known as fairy circles. And in Ireland today, they won't build, many builders won't build a house if there's a fairy circle there. And so perhaps this is, you know, what this is a more archetypal, more a pure way of viewing the flying saucer phenomenon, that these beings can take individual form and come into our bedrooms, or they can fuse into a single mandala and hit the skies.
So for people who have encounters with aliens and they have these, participate in this theater and presumably have some kind of cathartic experience, are there any common outcomes for those people?
Well, usually, yeah, it's a change, it's a deep, profound change in their outlook, just as any paranormal experience throws into question assumptions about our reality and about ourselves. I would say that the basic theme, the common theme of the abduction experience for abductees is that they become aware of an aspect of themselves, of a depth within themselves that they were not aware of previously. Certainly, abductees do tend to become more paranoid, less secure, less there's an instability, an uncertainty that comes into the life of these individuals, but I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. It shakes a person up to the core of their being. How could it not? Because when we experience something that there's not only no way to actually understand, but there's no way to even really talk about it within the context of our consensus of reality, except of course by now there is, by saying I was abducted by aliens, but this is very inadequate.
So do you think this whole theater initiation is really a way to, for these beings or forces or people, to manipulate the collective? Is it really geared towards manipulating the collective unconscious rather than the individual conscious?
Well, I don't think there would be separation from the point of view of these beings, or this energy, which, you know, they would perceive us as a collective of individuals. There's, I think that, you know, the whole idea that there's a separation there between the individual and collective is an illusion, surely. Because what you do to the individual, you're doing to the collective by definition, and what you're doing to the collective is also going to be felt by the individual at some level. The what appears to be happening with these abduction experiences is that they do understand that we experience ourselves as individuals and not as a collective, and so as a result of that, they have chosen to come to us as individuals and not as a collective, which is surprises or causes a lot of people to doubt the reality of this phenomenon, because our understanding is that an alien race or whatever would of course make itself known to us collectively by landing on the White House lawn.
Exactly.
This is the cliche that people expect, and of course that's the way that we would do it. We wouldn't, if we were to visit another planet, we wouldn't, or we imagine we wouldn't, actually our governments probably would do it this way, but as we imagine our democratic mindset, we would arrive and, you know, make a big show. We wouldn't go creeping into people's bedrooms. That would be seen as absurd and perverse.
Yeah, but that's exactly what happens. Not, I mean, in the government.
In the government, yeah. It is. It's, and that may also be why, part of why these beings are approaching us this way, because they understand, they see our world from the outside. They see that it's run on secrecy and denial and all the rest of it, and so they're simply operating within that context. It's impossible to say, really. But as to your question, this is definitely a collective experience. Perhaps it's some sort of natural selection that's occurring, that it's only those individuals who are somehow ready for it, or open to it, or perhaps in need of it in some way, in a personal way, that are having these experiences. And so it's growing in this way. It's coming to those individuals who are most ready for it or able to do something with it, in order that the virus can spread this way. It's like a, you could see it as a disease, if you will, that certain of us are more susceptible to. And so it's going to take hold of those individuals first and then spread through them.
So a psychic disease of some sort.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. It is a kind of virus, the alien abduction experience, and I think these entities are actually infiltrating us at a microscopic level, at a subatomic level.
Can you explain that a little further? How can they be subatomic and apparently normal-sized?
Well, why not? I mean, if they're a form of energy, if they're a conscious form of energy, then they would take any form that was convenient to them. and they may only take this form that we're familiar with as a way of imitating ourselves and even our idea of aliens, and actually interacting with us on a one-on-one level, but that would be very limiting for them as a collective and as not primarily physical. They would be restricting their capacities and making themselves vulnerable by doing that. A more safer but also more effective way of interacting with us would be by actually entering into our nervous system and changing us from within.
So you're actually saying viruses, real viruses?
Yeah, I think that the AIDS virus, I mean, that's HIV, supposedly. I don't actually think that either the truth is known, or if it is known about AIDS, it's certainly not been told to us. But whatever is being experienced as AIDS would appear to relate to this, the infiltration of the human nervous system by some kind of alien consciousness. I've understood it.
And malevolent?
No. Why would it be malevolent? Why would you assume it was malevolent? I mean, simply because it has negative effects. I mean, you know, a hurricane destroys buildings. It doesn't mean it's malevolent, does it? And, you know, mutation is always a tricky process. So, I mean, the AIDS, as we know it, is actually the body's response to something, isn't it? So, whatever it is that's...
It's an immune system dysfunction.
Mm-hmm.
So, people who have AIDS die of other diseases because they have no immunity to protect themselves.
Right. So the immune system is breaking down. Perhaps this breakdown is actually a transformation. The first stages of transformation. And so, it's possible for the... I would say psychic organism, I mean the individual anyway, to survive that breakdown long enough for the nervous system and the immune system to reconfigure itself in a new design, then we can survive this process. But if not, then death comes before transformation.
So then as a keen paranoid who's interested in this mutation and maybe wanting to encourage it to go further, you wouldn't yourself actually go out and attempt to contract AIDS.
Well, no, of course not, because it's just a side effect.
Like volunteering for it, right? Like, if that's what it is, if you believe that's what
no,
it is.
No, but I didn't say that AIDS was the cause of this transformation. I said it was like a side effect of it.
So then, how do you catch the alien virus? Like,
well, you don't really catch it. If I'm right, then it's something that's moving through the collective nervous system of humanity, and so it's in the earth itself. May even be native to the earth. Although it does seem to be, I mean, our response to it seems to suggest it is alien, that it's a foreign entity that we're fighting off. But that may be to do with our psychology as much as our physical makeup. We may be simply resisting it. I mean, there's certain diseases, well, not diseases, but viruses that enter into the body, and that it's not the virus that kills the body, it's the body's attempt to attack that virus that causes the body to actually destroy itself. The body will attack itself as a way to try and get rid of this, what it perceives as a destructive energy or entity. But in actual fact, if you can trick the immune system into not resisting that entity, then the person is cured. So it's not the virus itself that's killing them, it's their own immune system. And so it may be a similar situation here, that the way, it's not nothing to do with trying to catch the virus, or it's simply to do with opening up to it and not resisting it, because it's coming in anyway. So allowing the mutation to occur. And I think we say the same about this alien experience. If we simply open up to it and allow it to be what it is, we might start to experience it in a less malevolent fashion and have the option of actually understanding it on its own terms, which is the only way you can understand anything. If you cease to insist to view it on our own terms, then we have a chance of actually seeing it for what it is, which so far nobody seems to have done, which is no doubt why you're so confused by all this. And
well, I'm at a loss for words because the idea of aliens as viruses, like nanotechnology attempting to mutate human physiology. I mean, it really is incredible. And so I don't know what to say about that.
Well, again, it's been echoed in fiction. I mean, there's some of the cutting edge movies and literature of the last 30 years. So William Burroughs was particularly interested in this subject. I think it's an idea whose time has come. I think it's inseparable from the what is being touted as the spiritual awakening of humanity, Christ consciousness, the return of the gods, all these rather more woolly metaphysical or religious ideas seem to me also to be better understood as a viral response, something happening in the human body, DNA related, DNA mutation.
I don't have any way to move from that to my next question.
Well, then just go straight to it. I'm going to have some of this yummy apple pie.
So then do you think it's credible that there are a group of human beings, Illuminati or whoever, who are consciously collaborating with aliens or alien viruses?
Do I think that's credible?
Yeah, is that credible?
Yeah, I think it's more than credible. I think it's inevitable conclusion based on the evidence. I mean, at the very least, there's a bunch of humans trying to create that impression. And if we accept the alien presence, whatever it may be, then if it's if this experience is accessible to just your average Joe, then why wouldn't it be accessible to these ultra-sophisticated intelligence agencies with all their surveillance technology and all the rest of it? There's no way, it seems, that they wouldn't have found a way to somehow interact with it. Also, these beings, I mean, if they can appear as physical beings, then why would they not wish to interact with the government at some level? They would be, by definition, involved with every sphere of human society at every level. So that would then include the most obvious, unsubtle level. And if they also reflect back at us our own natures, then they would interact with the government on those terms as literal alien beings who wish to form a secret treaty and exchange, you know, their technology for a free hand abducting nubile females.
That's
and
just ridiculous.
God only knows. It is indeed ridiculous, but it's plausible that these beings are prepared even to kind of enact such an absurd and coarse science fiction scenario as a form of deception, but also theatre, when dealing with such literal-minded people as those who run our government.
So you don't think that there are members of this cabal who are collaborating with the aliens as viruses?
Well, yeah, that would be a higher or a deeper level than sorcerers and alchemists and whatnot. And I think that...
So, well...
Yeah, this is a less talked about, less understood area of intrigue that I think probably does occur also.
Well, it gives a whole new spin on the vaccination programs.
Definitely, yeah. Well, of course, the implant is the most obvious example of this. Humans have possibly been receiving implants for decades in secret, but now the implant, the microchip, is actually on the market. One can actually order one.
But that's a device. That's not an alien. That's just a...
It's not an alien. It's not a virus. It's not organic. But you mentioned nanotechnology earlier, so there's every reason to think that these implants, if they aren't already, would also be a form of nanotechnology that would actually cause some sort of mutation
I see.
Within the human body and perhaps turn us into biological machines of some kind.
Okay, I'm just going to move on to my next question. Unless,
did I answer that one?
I don't even remember. I have no idea.
Oh, yeah, I did, more or less.
You got anything to add about the...
The secret elite? No, no, that's just all in my books, I think.
All of this stuff is dynamic and changing over time, reflecting of the state of collective psyche.
Yes.
You'd agree with that. So then, if we look at the mythology around these encounters, or the sightings, we might be able to see how the collective psyche has changed over time.
Yeah.
So is there a specific or significant way that you see that the mythology around UFOs and aliens has developed over in the modern time, let's say?
You mean over the last 60 years?
Yeah.
Since it began?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's developed in very obvious ways, undeniable ways. I mean, the most drastic development is that from mere sightings to actual interaction, where the aliens became intrusive, when they actually entered into our lives and actually carried us off physically into their realm. And this was an obvious turning point, which seems to have happened pretty much halfway through the phenomenon, you might say, to date, because if it began in the late 40s, then sometime in the 80s, became interactive, which is a key point in regard to your question more generally in terms of the psyche, the human psyche, and its relationship to the imaginal, or even to the divine and also to the demonic, that only in this last century has it actually become interactive. In the sense that it's no longer an article of faith or belief. Not to these abductees. They are actually experiencing something that cannot be denied, even though it is being denied.
Well, of course, that's what happened with Carl Jung, where he developed a relationship with a fragment of his psyche that lasted several years, and that was a...
Yeah, and I think it relates in both cases to a split becoming so deep, so profound, so complete, that that aspect of our psyche, it becomes autonomous and then actually comes back to it. So the symmetry, if you like, is that it's only in the time now where we are so completely divorced from the imaginal, or the divine, or even the demonic, in a sense, and as far as having a relationship with it, that it can actually manifest to us and interact with us. So in other words, when it becomes the least real to us, it then becomes the most real, but in a totally different way, on a different octave, you might say.
In a terrifying way, probably.
Basically, it's a terrifying way, yeah, or... which is perhaps no better in a way that inspires worship or slavery. Because a lot of people, I mean, there are people who don't necessarily have a negative abduction experience, but they are somehow emotionally overwhelmed by it in a different way, and that they become in awe of it and feel that they're in the presence of some divine force, and they wish to surrender completely to it prematurely, I might add, because they're not, they may be in the presence of something beyond our understanding, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's God, of course, just an aspect of that. I mean, the tendency to interpret, it's always to interpret this as either, or is it demonic or is it divine, is it benevolent, is it malevolent, that forces this force into a sort of caricature of itself, and so then again we're not really having a relationship with it. So the fear is a way to keep it at bay, but so is the reverence that many people have for this experience.
So have you had an experience like that, where something that you were able to recognize as an externalization of something from your psyche that you were able to interact with? Because wouldn't most people see it as not themselves?
Yeah, of course you would. I mean, that's the point. If it's outside of yourself, it by definition is not yourself. If we define ourselves as our physical selves, then it's a difficult question, actually, because would I necessarily know it? And because this, as I say, if something gets that externalized, that separate from our inner life, then we don't recognize it when it does come to us, hence the alien. I mean, I definitely understand your question, and I know that I have had this experience, but I can't necessarily identify it. That's the interesting thing. Because, I mean, in dreams, does that count in a dream when it's, one can then become fully aware that one is encountering an entity or a consciousness that is separate from oneself, but it's also, one can be aware that one is dreaming and therefore that it is also an aspect of oneself. That would, I suppose the other times that I've had this experience, now that I think about it, would be through the use of psychedelics, powerful psychotropic substances, in which I perceived my surrounding, my environment, as an extension of my consciousness and a reflection of my inner self. I don't know, does that answer your question?
Yeah, sure. I was just thinking that it's ironic that there are all these abductees who are, or and even probably other people who are experiencing these fragments of themselves or fragments of the collective as externalized beings coming and terrifying them by abducting them and anal probing them and all of that, and really wishing to God that they weren't having those experiences, and here you are sort of seeking that.
Well, that's always the way. I mean, we seek after intensity until we find it, and then when we find it, when we're in it, we simply seek to escape from it and to have tranquility again. That seems to be the human condition. I mean, it's more perhaps mundane or superficial for most people, or many people, it's just this seeking excitement and then wishing to God they hadn't got it. For example, falling in love, that's a way. Everybody wants that if they don't have it, but many people wish to God that they... it hadn't happened once it does, because it stirs up the emotions to an unbearable degree, and then they realize that they were quite happy before, they just didn't know it, and so they just yearn for that peace and tranquility. Whitley Strieber describes this very acutely, that when these beings didn't come to him, he found himself longing for their presence, but then the moment they appeared, he would do absolutely anything if they would just not be real, because the terror was so intense. But then once again, once they're gone, the day passes and he realizes that his life is relatively empty without the intensity of that communion with the other. So I wouldn't say that I'm necessarily seeking interaction with alien beings, but I'm constantly seeking challenges that will allow me to tap into undiscovered areas of my psyche. So maybe that's what the aliens are doing to us as well, you know, taking us through levels of trauma so that we can become resistant to, or flexible to, trauma, or experiences that would be traumatic or are traumatic to begin with. We have to become more fluid, less rigid, and not resist. Because a lot of the terror that we experience, speaking personally, is it's not rational terror. It is and it isn't. It's rational terror in the sense that it's the terror of the rational mind that's unable to deal with this experience. But it's not rational in the sense that it's necessary to our survival. Because terror in the face of a lion so that we have adrenaline to run is one thing. Whereas terror in the face of an unknown being staring into our eyes, who actually isn't going to devour us and we can't run anyway, is not irrational. It's not a survival mechanism. It's sort of it's an atavistic thing within us that it seems that we are being goaded to evolve beyond this now, this fight or flight pattern. and that this energy is allowing us to confront that deepest well of terror within us, which is perhaps the terror of the annihilation of the self, more than a physical fear of death or destruction. I think it's a psychological fear that we can't hold on to our identities in the face of this unknown.
You would think that there would be simpler ways to go about doing that.
I don't know, would you? It seems like a pretty complex maneuver. If it were that easy, it would be great, wouldn't it? Just take a ride on the roller coaster and kiss your identity goodbye.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned in one of your other interviews that you have the sense that these alien beings are desperate.
Well, I think we're talking about, or I was talking about a particular, a sort of lower octave of this energy. You might say that a sort of degenerated faction of these beings that coincides most closely with the accepted law of the greys as basically updated versions of the ancient succubi and incubi, or vampires even, that are like parasites that use humans as host bodies to feed off and to sustain themselves. And I think that there's just an inherent desperation. It's a hunger. I think it's a hunger. And the ET law has literalized this as a dying race, as DNA is used up, and so they need to regenerate their stock artificially. And so they actually use the stock of human beings as even blood-drinking reptilians, for example, as a variation on that, to regenerate themselves. I think it's much subtler than that. I think that even...
Well, if there are aspects of ourselves, then that couldn't possibly be true.
Well, it could relate to the aspects of the collective at this point, because what would make these beings vampiric is that they're not aspects that are necessary to us. They're aspects that do need to be shed off and cast off and recycled, but they're retaining a semblance of autonomy by feeding off the living, and so it could relate in terms of the collective to astral fragments, the ghosts of the dead, essentially, which have no life except what they can take from the living. I don't know, this is there are so many different sort of models to interpret this, and they all overlap, which makes it even more difficult, because one can interpret this one way and then seek into another interpretation. They should be mutually inclusive, the different ways of experiencing this phenomena, if I'm right, which is that it is a manifestation of the collective psyche. And the collective psyche is so multifaceted that it is going to entail numerous different facets, the same phenomenon.
Which is what you're saying, that greys, viruses, ghosts,
demons,
succubi, vampires,
inorganic
parasites,
beings, fires,
all essentially the same phenomenon. Even UFOs.
And God. Throw God in there.
And God, too.
God, the human soul. There's the two ends of the spectrum, of course.
Do you mean the Jehovah God? Or
no, I mean God as in the conscious energy that the universe has spawned from.
So the real God?
Yeah, the true God as in consciousness. The awareness, the unified energy of awareness.
So are those things would have to also then be fragments of God?
Well, everything is fragments of God.
So the vampires and the succubi and all of that, they're fragments of God.
Yeah.
Too.
Yes. And the question is difference between fragments that can be fused together into a totality and those fragments that can't and simply must be recycled, which is to say destroyed. And then recycled. So the damned, what we experience, what we poetically refer to as the damned.
So, conjecture here. The aliens that are desperately trying to regenerate their DNA or whatever it is that they're doing, perhaps they are fragments of God that are aware that they're damned and are trying to find a way to save themselves from being damned. Is that...
They don't want to be recycled. They want to retain some kind of autonomy, which is perhaps what made them damned to begin with, is that they splintered off from their collective, which, of course, you know, there are many different collectives which fuse together to make a greater collective. They are resisting it. They're attempting to direct a process that is directing them. Because the only way that they, and indeed we as a species, can survive now is to allow ourselves to be spliced into something new, into a new being. And just as the dinosaurs became the birds of today, and we ourselves are the reincarnation as a species of previous species that have walked the earth or the oceans, this is the only continuity, the only possible survival for any species or individual is as awareness. And this is a process that can be allowed or resisted. And so I think that we're talking about, just as the astral fragments would be these hungry ghosts who refuse to be recycled and they wish to retain some sort of autonomy. And so even though they have to stay in this damned state of limbo to escape, that's the only way they can escape what they perceive as annihilation, which in actual fact is simply absorption back into the sea of awareness, so that they can continue as awareness, simply not as individual awareness. This is what I would perceive the desperation of these beings, and I think it's inseparable from the desperation of human entities who are basically in the same huiclaw, the dead end of attempting a literal version of immortality, which is impossible. But once you've gone so far down that road, you can't turn back. It becomes too frightening, I think, because of the karmic consequences of what are perceived as that. And so then they've got no choice but just to continue. It's like demons, you know, who won't repent. It's that simple. That's the best I can come up with. Your very challenging question. I feel all the entities gathering around saying, don't badmouth us. Get it right. They're lost children, I mean souls that need rescuing. There is redemption for all, because all is awareness, and all these experiences are redeemable. It's just the attachment to them, and it desperation breeds misbehavior.
So then, the greys who are interfering with people because of their own self-interest, because they don't want to go where they don't want to go, then those beings, or fragments, or whatever they are malevolent.
So far as there is such a thing as malevolence, I think Crowley said that the only definition of evil is the something like the unreal striving to become real.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. It's been very interesting conversation with you, Aeolus.
Yes, it has.
Strange. Now, just one last thing. So, aliens or UFO sightings do have some association with places where kids, I guess, gather to have sexual encounters, like lovers' lanes.
Mm-hmm.
So what is that about? Are they there to feed on the energy, or is there something else going on there? What is that?
Well, I think you're assigning a sort of degree of calculation which I wouldn't assign to these beings. I don't think they plot and scheme in this way. Whether we're talking about the more benevolent, the more enlightened of them, or indeed the malevolent, because I think that in either case, what makes them different from ourselves is that they, even if we think in the most archetype terms of angels and demons, these are not beings that are autonomous, because angels and demons are always part of some sort of hierarchical structure, and they are inseparable from their function. Just as gravity and electricity are, they're not beings, they're not even energies, are they? They're functions. They can take many different forms. We see them by their effects, we don't really see the cause, and this is, I think that angels and demons are more causes than effects. I think, you know, with this question, that's always what the first thing that comes to mind is that it's not as though these beings are seeking out certain types of people or certain types of experience, but that they're actually drawn by it, like a moth to the flame. So it's to do with magnetism, electromagnetism, and so there'll be certain areas, spots on the earth which are like strange attractors for these kinds of experiences. It's very subtle what I'm seeing now, because it's not really to do with beings at all, it's to do with events that play out in a certain way, and then we are drawn to them as human individuals and as whatever else these entities may be. We're drawn to these areas in time and space in order to act out these functions, and they're little bits of theatre that allow movement of energy, exchange of energy, which is happening as part of the Earth's, the nervous system of the Earth, ecosphere, however you want to see that, all these things are happening within the body of the earth. Movements of cells, of energies, of molecules within the body of the earth. We're experiencing that as the individual cells and molecules and trying to figure out why one molecule is doing one thing with another, but that's actually not what's happening at all. There's nothing doing anything to anything there. There's simply this totality which is happening, which is evolving and changing. And so it's always about balance. So the sexual thing, I mean, this is an awakening. Again, it's an awakening in the body. Awakening of the, well, the most coarse level of the hormones, etc. within the human body that are woken through sexual interaction. Then at the subtle level of the kundalini, of the psychic energy, and this attracts similar or complementary energies in our environment, and then so that there's some sort of interaction there, and there's potentially an exchange. This is probably the original exchange, the original sin even, knowledge of good and evil, relationship between the body, physical matter and the subtle energy that informs it, the energy of the spirit or the soul. I think this kind of primal or even original, this is the genesis of life itself, came from this process. I think we're such a low, sort of the last turn of the spiral now before we start reascending, that it's now being enacted, experienced in the most coarse, literal and kind of fragmentary fashion, where we're just seeing these bizarre enactments. But I think they adhere to the same basic blueprint, which is just the most simple blueprint of life, which is, the energy of positive and negative, of yin and yang, flowing together and creating a third thing. So, of course, this is always going to be most dynamic when the sexual energies are actively and consciously engaged. This is going to open doorways and windows for these movements to happen.
That's it. Thanks for answering my questions.
Well, thank you for coming on the show and having so many stimulating questions. It's been a real pleasure.